This is Joanne Viviano. I'm the health and medical reporter here at the Columbus Dispatch, and we are here with Kevin Stankiewicz, another reporter, and Doral Chenoweth, who's one of our videographers, to talk a little bit about a story regarding a doctor who's been accused of giving potentially fatal doses of pain medication to 27 near-death patients in the Mount Carmel Health System.
Thanks for having us, Joanne.
Thank you, Joanne.
So we're now in the third day, going on the fourth day of this story. And what we know so far is two lawsuits have been fired against Mount Carmel and the doctor, William Husel. And at this point, we know of 27 cases that a Mount Carmel review has found out where Dr. Husel may have given excessive doses of painkillers to patients in the intensive care unit, which is a key thing to stress, that it's hard. We don't know right now if the actions of the doctor were deliberately ended their lives, but these patients were in the intensive care unit and all their families had been asked to have them removed from life-saving measures. So at this point, there's a lot unknown, but we have slowly been able to find out more about some of the patients who Doral's had a chance to talk to, the widow of one of them. So the story's coming together fast, but there still is a lot out there about what happened that we're unaware of.
Apparently, this story has been in the works for a while. It just came to the public attention Monday afternoon. We spoke with Jerry Leesburg, who is a Columbus attorney who filed the first case against Mount Carmel for this situation. And he surprisingly said that he had a woman come to him whose mother had died at Mount Carmel, and she came to his office with what she thought was a problem with the assisted living facility where the mother lived. But it turns out that Leesburg did some research and came up with something surprisingly different. Can we play this clip that we recorded this morning, Wednesday morning, of Jerry Leesburg, the attorney?
She contacted me originally because she had questions about why her mother's condition deteriorated so rapidly, and she ended up passing away in a relatively short period of time, and had questions about whether or not the care that she had received at the assisted care facility had been proper and appropriate, or whether or not her condition had deteriorated because things weren't done that needed to be done or weren't done properly. So that's not unusual. We investigate a lot of medical malpractice claims all the time, and in the vast majority of cases, we find that there weren't anything done improperly. So we agreed to review the records, and we got the records from the assisted care facility and the hospitalization, and we're reviewing them primarily with a focus because of her concerns about the care that was provided at the assisted care facility. And it was during the course of our investigation and review of those records with my nursing staff and consultation with doctors that we saw eventually this fentanyl administration of 1,000 micrograms. And she was not aware of that. And when we consulted with our medical expert, he said there was no therapeutic justification for that. And it was coincidentally right about that same point in time that somebody from hospital administration reached out to the daughter and mentioned to her that there were some concerns about the medication that her mother had received. So at that point in time, all the alarms started going off, and we were putting two and two together and realizing that this was, in fact, what the situation was.
Mount Carmel tells us they discovered this in October when an employee came forward with some concerns about things that were happening. And they then conducted an investigation, which resulted in the firing of Dr. Husel and them turning information they had gathered over to legal authorities. They then also began contacting patients to let them know what they had discovered. And on Monday, after this lawsuit was filed, is when they made those findings public.
And right now we know that Dr. Husel's been fired. 20 other employees have been placed on leave, and those are from nurses to pharmacists.
I believe that's 6 pharmacists and 14 nurses.
Okay, and then the other thing I think would probably be worth noting for people right now too is that in the first lawsuit with the attorney we had just heard from, a pharmacist and a nurse were named in that lawsuit as well. So as far as I know, and Joanne, let me know, those individuals have not been fired from Mount Carmel. So far, it's only Dr. Husel, but those folks were also named in the lawsuit. So that's just another piece of this that is still kind of up in the air right now, and maybe we'll find more on that, but there could be more coming down the pipe, at least from Mount Carmel's end, with those individuals.
That's what Attorney Jerry Leesburg insinuated when he said that there's been a lot of back channel talk in the Columbus medical community about the situation.
Now, I don't know when Mount Carmel got word about concerns or issues and where the initial awareness or notice came from. I've heard about the whistleblower, so to speak, or somebody that was tipping off administration that they had concerns. But I've also heard through, you know, my information and back channels that there were other people in the medical community in Columbus at large, in other hospitals, that were aware for quite a while that there were concerns about things that were happening at Mount Carmel and that there was going to be some kind of big explosion when word got out. So, you know, that's something that we're going to want to explore and find out exactly, you know, when and how this first came to light and what the immediate response to it was.
So another piece to this, as I had kind of noted earlier, is that the patients who had died, all 27 of these, they have died, and they were in the intensive care unit, basically in pretty poor condition when they got there. And the families had asked that the life-saving measures be removed. So that's at the point then where doctors typically will prescribe painkillers to somebody who is being removed from, you know, life support or some other, you know, a ventilator or what have you. But I've had an opportunity to talk with some people who are experts in that area, in that space, who say that the actions described right now about Dr. Huzel are, one called it egregious, and the amount of fentanyl that was prescribed to Janet Kavanaugh, who was named in the first lawsuit, he called it excessive, a massive amount, and said that it was equivalent to putting in a thumbtack with a crane from a construction site. So that's the piece when a lot of people probably when they first saw this were like, well, if these are near-death patients, like, weren't they going to die anyway? And what people are that have looked at this case, at least what's out there right now, say that the behavior that so far has been described from Dr. Huzel is above what you're supposed to do. It is very common for a doctor to administer painkiller because if somebody's having trouble breathing, can't breathe, they go off a ventilator, they're going to be in pain. And so to ease that suffering, you might give a small dose of morphine, but you're supposed to give it little by little, not in one huge dose, which based on at least the behavior in the Kavanaugh situation, it seems as if Dr. Huzel prescribed just 1,000 micrograms of fentanyl. And one doctor I said he'd never given more than 100 micrograms, so more than 10 times that amount.
You know, last night I was talking to a widower, David Austin. His wife, Bonnie Austin, died at Mount Carmel West under the care of Dr. Huzel. And attorney David Schroyer, actually, he read the hospital's own records. And there was a 5-minute span there where the doctor administered the fentanyl and then the family made the decision to end life support. So there's so many gray areas here. You know, was that just a problem where they didn't log their decisions in the right order? Or did this doctor indeed go ahead and prescribe and inject the fentanyl before he talked to the families? You know, in 27 cases, there's going to be a lot of different nuances and it'll all come out in the end. But right now, there's a lot of red flags going up.
Yeah. And Doral, with that case, that was 600 micrograms was the case with Bonnie Austin too, yeah. Which based on the folks that I had talked to, oh, well, 600 still seems to some of the experts that I spoke with quite high and unusual amount that you would prescribe. Because the key piece to note here too is that these folks are in end of life situations. And so what you're really trying to do is ease the suffering, which is why the doctor said that the amounts that's been described so far are so high, because these people are going to be in pain, but you're going to be starting on slower dosages. You don't know exactly how much pain they're in right now. So you start low and then you ease up to a point where they're no longer in suffering and then maybe pass away. So 600 micrograms would also be way higher than anything that these doctors I talked to.
But did the family even know what was going on? You know, the widower, David Austin, said last night he had no idea that his wife was prescribed fentanyl. And he was an Army medic. He says he's been around people who have passed away from overdoses. He's seen, you know, he's kind of like living in the streets type of thing. You know, he sees what's going on out there. And he said, you know, if there had been fentanyl in that discussion, he would have said no.
Joanne, do you know any more about if it's been fentanyl in every case? Or, I mean, what do we know about some of these other cases, if anything, at this point?
We don't. We don't know any details about any of the cases except what lawyers have told us. In at least one case, there was a patient as young as in his or her 40s. So we're told that there are very different circumstances involved in the conditions of these patients. So, like, they were there for very different reasons, different ages. It wasn't like there was a certain type of patient that this happened to or allegedly happened to. So it's kind of across the board. And we don't know if fentanyl is the drug used. We've been told by Mount Carmel that it is painkiller. The two lawsuits do name fentanyl.
But the ethical issue is, should doctors be doing this? And Attorney Leesburg addressed that in a FaceTime conversation I had with him this morning.
We don't know exactly what's happened with respect to each patient's family, but regardless of whether a patient's family sits down with medical care providers and has a discussion about whether or not they want their loved one to be resuscitated in the event there's a code, or what kind of life support measures they want to have, what kind of comfort measures they want to have, that's a very appropriate discussion to have, and it's a very legitimate decision for families to make. That's totally different from what we have here. And a family having a discussion about withdrawing life support measures or having a do not resuscitate order has absolutely nothing to do with a physician then coming in without any discussion or permission and giving a patient a lethal dose of a drug. One just has nothing to do with the other. Now, the reality is that some of these patients' lives may have only been shortened by a short period of time. But that's not the fundamental issue here. It's really a moral, philosophical, legal, ethical issue here about who gets to make the decision about when someone is going to die. Whether when I have the right to make the decision about when I'm going to die, or my family members have the right to make the decision about when and how and the circumstances under which I'm going to be allowed to pass away, that's an entirely different conversation than what's going on here.
Even if the family was aware, this is still a problem.
I mean, you're not allowed in Ohio to simply use a drug for the purpose of killing a patient, period. That's not permissible. And that's apparently what was done here.
Leesburg also commented a little bit about how Mount Carmel reacted to the situation. And the health system, which has several hospitals here in the central Ohio area, is affiliated with the Catholic Church. And David Schroyer had specifically mentioned that. The other attorney that was handling Bonnie Austin's case had also mentioned that specifically, that they're a Catholic hospital. And it's unusual for healthcare systems to kind of take accountability, take responsibility for what's happened. So what happened at Mount Carmel is what they've told us is that after this came to light, they did some of the administrative actions that we already discussed, but then they also went ahead and changed some policies in hopes of creating more alerts, more steps in the system if a dose of medication that is prescribed is considered excessive.
You know, this broke on Monday afternoon, and I think Mount Carmel handled it really well as you could be, to run a huge healthcare system and have 27 deaths attributed to one doctor. When I was driving back up to Columbus from an out-of-town assignment and became aware of this Mount Carmel situation, one of the first things I heard was the CEO and president of the hospital, Ed Lamb, saying, you know, we're sorry, and they brought the news forward. That is really unusual in the public relations world for a hospital to do something like that.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. I think we have a clip of the president who kind of can offer a little bit of insight on the hospital's perspective.
This is a 1-minute excerpt from about a 3 or 4 minute video that they put out and got out in front of the news with this, and with a lengthy written statement as well.
We apologize for this tragedy, and we're truly sorry for the additional grief this may have caused the families. Our team has contacted these families and will continue to answer their questions and concerns as best as we can. We're working hard to learn all we can about these cases, and we removed 20 hospital staff from providing further patient care while we gather more facts. This includes a number of nurses who administered the medication and a number of staff pharmacists who were also involved in the related patient care. The actions instigated by this doctor were unacceptable and inconsistent with the values and practices of Mount Carmel. Regardless of the reasons the actions were taken, we take responsibility for the fact that the processes in place were not sufficient to prevent these actions from happening. We're doing everything to understand how this happened and what we need to do to ensure that it never happens again. Our thoughts and prayers are with the involved patients and their families, and we ask for their forgiveness.
That's an incredible statement from a hospital CEO to seek forgiveness for these deaths.
Yeah, both attorneys that we have heard from so far agree with that this is very unusual. Both have been in this field for at least 30 years and have dealt with various hospitals, healthcare systems, and say that this almost never happens. So they were saying that Mount Carmel does deserve some praise for handling it the way that they have.
Let's hear from David Schroyer, who Columbus Dispatch reporter Jim Woods and I spoke with last night. He's the attorney representing Bonnie Austin.
I've been litigating cases, suing Mount Carmel for 30 years, and I find them to be a very ethical organization. Mm. And I think at some point, people ought to realize that once the administration was notified, they took the steps, did the investigation, notified these people as to what happened. The word I'm hearing from David as well as another client is that they've been very professional and how they handled things.
Yeah, I think as we'd said here, that the fact that the attorneys are going out of their way to compliment Mount Carmel, you know, speaks volumes, I think, to the actions that they've taken, because there's been stuff behind closed doors that we probably don't even know about that Mount Carmel's done, and the attorneys do. So that definitely is something worth noting. And one thing I wanted to let people know too, that as the Ed Lamb had mentioned too, that when it comes to the administering of the drug, there are a couple links in the chain, so that the doctor will come up with the prescription, the amount, and a pharmacist has to fill that, and then the nurses administer it. So if you're wondering why other people are named or why other people are suspended, the doctor isn't the one necessarily, you know, putting forth the drug into the patient. They're not injecting an IV necessarily. They order the prescription, but there are other people along the way who must have seen the amount that had been ordered, which is can explain at why it's not just one doctor being fired and that's it. There are other people involved here, whether or not, you know, the varying degrees of responsibility are not for us to say, but it's not just a doctor who makes a prescription and executes something based on his will. There are other people that are involved.
And some of the folks I've talked to in the pharmacy field are very adamant that pharmacists should stand up and say something if they see something of this nature, or they see something of a nature that is inappropriate, you know, a medication that is too high of a dose or a fatal dose. So people in the industry are pretty concerned that there may have been pharmacists involved in this. Now, one of the men I talked to did say, when you do correct a doctor, sometimes you get a thank you and sometimes you get called, you know, a four-letter word, but it is still important to do that in the interest of patients.
Yeah, I think that's, at least from a personal standpoint, who else knew what and what did they, that's one of the pieces that, I think is the one of the more interesting parts to this here is, you know, where did the ideas originate from to order these prescriptions, and who else behaved in a certain way is one area that I'm really interested to find out more
on. Yeah, Attorney David Schroyer said last night that, you know, many times it's the nurses who just will not fill an order. They should be the patient advocate and look out for them and stop these types of things from happening. So what's next?
Well, as I had said previously, Mount Carmel has given information that they have gathered to authorities. So Columbus Police and the Franklin County Prosecutor's Office are investigating. My understanding, they are investigating Dr. Husel. I don't know if they're investigation expands upon that or not. We really don't have any details of exactly what they're looking into. So there's the potential for criminal charges. We've already had two lawsuits. The lawyers we've talked to expect more to come. It may take some time because there's a lot of information to collect in cases like this, but we may see some more lawsuits coming down the pike. And
one bit of minutia that Leesburg talked about was, in some cases, these deceased people's estates have been closed. And so there's effectively, legally, nobody to represent them anymore, or other attorneys will go back in and they'll have to reopen those estates, appoint an executor or somebody along those lines, and so that there can be a voice for the deceased.
He described that as kind of a hurdle and, you know, another step in the process before a lawsuit can even be considered, really. And I also think there are a lot of questions out there that people may have that may never be answered. And probably the biggest one is why, if this indeed was intended. Intentional behavior, if this indeed did happen and was intentional behavior, why would a physician do it, you know, with some of the ramifications that I'm sure he or she would know could happen? And also, if there were 20 people involved in this, why would there be 20 people who, among them, there wouldn't be one who would stand up? So what is the culture in a hospital setting that might lead to something that's alleged here to happen? So I think those are some of the questions that people may have, but may be difficult to get answers to. Are there any other things you're hearing that seem to be problematic for people?
Well, yeah, I mean, the culture one was the folks that I talked to who kind of weighing in ethically on it, that had came up from both of them. And the other thing that had come up about the why piece is one doctor I spoke to, Dr. Lydia Dugdale, who is a biomedic ethics professor at Yale's Law Medical School. She was saying that, you know, it's easier to do that. It's easier if you think a patient is dying, a patient is an end of life, they've been take off what she calls death delaying procedures. It's easier to just give them a large dose of painkillers that you are fully aware that could kill them. The harder thing to do is to provide that care, that every 10 minutes checking about how much dosage you should give. Okay, are they still in pain? Let's up the fentanyl doses from 25 micrograms to 50. So, you know, the why piece, that was potentially one thing, is that it's easier to do what is being alleged from this doctor, to just, this patient is probably going to die. It's easier to do that. The harder thing is to take the time. So we still might never find out why, but that is one thing that, you know, I heard from folks that is just a piece of what could explain it.
And it is worth noting that I've heard from at least one member of the community that feels that if Dr. Husel was doing this, that it was the right thing to do. That at the end of life, families are suffering, watching their loved one in pain, the loved one is suffering, and that this is sort of, my words, not his, but sort of a angel of mercy type of thing. So there are, not everyone out there finds what's alleged here problematic. And also, you know, some of the folks I've talked to have said, we don't know everything yet. Like, everything sounds kind of terrible and awful and so improper right now, but there's so many questions to be answered and possibly the details that we will hear in the coming months that could really cast this in a different light.
But as always, as those details come out, stay with us at the Dispatch, because Joanne has been on top of the story. She's been doing a great job, and she'll keep you there, as will Doral. Myself and the rest of our colleagues will make sure that when we know something and that's important to report, it will be out there, and you all can follow along this important story here in Central Ohio.
And thank you for listening.